Welcome to Paddling Adventures Radio. I'm Sean Rowley, and with me is Derek Specht.
Hello.
Derek, what's
good
up?
Good day, sir. I'm tired today.
Are you? Do you want to just cancel this week's episode?
Let's do it.
Going for a nap.
Going for a nap.
Just pick any previous episode and play it and just pretend it's the new one. Go way, way back to one of our early
ones. Or you
just
keep talking and I'll snore in the corner.
But that's what we usually do. What are we drinking this week, Derek?
You are drinking Johnny Walker Black Label.
And why am I drinking Johnny Walker Black Label?
Because I forgot to pick up beer.
Again. This is really HR has been down here already.
Not pulling my weight.
Just not pulling your weight. There's been complaints to HR. I don't know who's been complaining. Might have been the dog. But HR is not happy.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's going on your permanent record. How's your week been?
It's been good. The weather is finally starting to turn around. We do have a bumper crop of cormorants at work, so that's not so exciting. And, I did discover that, speaking of cormorants and other feathered friends that migrate, there's a, I can't remember the university, I should have sent you the article, but they're doing weekly water testing down between Windsor and Point Pelee, and they're sampling and testing for bird flu or whatever the bird virus.
Yeah. Really?
So they are finding it in the water, and they are finding that the birds are shedding it. But it's so far, it's not so bad. There is a concern that anybody who spends time around the water, there could be exposure. It's very rare for humans to get it.
What is that H1N1 or whatever it's called?
H1N1, that's pretty good.
Yeah. I pay attention some days to things other than paddling and donuts.
I think it's H1N1. Anyways.
Bird flu.
Yeah. But yeah, so they are testing because it's a dual corridor, major migratory route that passes through the area near Port Pelee.
Mm-hmm. Lots of birds go through there. Mm-hmm. A lot of migrating birds go through there. Yeah.
Yeah, they're finding lots of dead birds.
Not good. Mm-hmm. Not good.
Careful in the water.
We were on the trails this weekend testing out a new item that we bought.
Oh, yes.
To hopefully be used
on
canoe trips.
New bling for the HR person.
Yeah, one of the HR persons. It came in the mail. It was like $25 off of Amazon. I had to buy something else, so it's on there, and I saw that, and I figured, ooh, pick up one of those. It's a harness for Athena.
Yeah.
And it lets us put a GoPro on her back and a GoPro on her chest.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have two GoPros, that's a bonus.
Yes.
Which I do.
Yeah.
So I put those on there, and we decided, you know what? We're going to go to the leash-free trails and let her boogie through the bush.
Yeah.
Meet up with other dogs, rough and tumble. There's a river through there. She can go boogieing through the river and just to see how this works.
Yeah.
No problem putting it on her whatsoever. But, I mean, the straps that hold it on are elastic.
Mm-hmm.
So you're kind of hesitant on how tight to pull it.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
But, because you don't want to restrict her breathing, mm-hmm. right? But I pulled it tight enough after about 20 tries to that everything wasn't moving that much. And it was still plenty.
She didn't seem to care.
She didn't care.
Yeah.
Right? I did have to jimmy the one for her chest. I did have to jimmy those straps a little bit underneath her collar to hold it up.
Okay.
And that stopped everything from moving except for the plate that holds the GoPro camera on her chest slowly starts to fall down the more she runs and everything. So you're looking from people's hips to the ground.
Yeah.
And then a little while later, you see their knees to the ground. Then you see their feet. And then you just see, like, ground. So you got to go call her over,
yeah,
pull it all the way back up. So I just got to find some way to lock. Just
loop it back inside itself so it's
yeah,
got a loop.
Yeah, so I got to think of some way to do that, mm-hmm, just to make it so I can just, you're not having that issue. I don't mind seeing the bottom of her chin.
Yeah.
But even still, like if I can make it so it doesn't move, I can put like a 2-inch stem out from that,
yeah,
and mount,
yeah,
the GoPro to that so you don't see her chin.
Do you have a staple gun?
Tracy said I can't use that. Yeah. What do you do with that nail gun? Nothing? Nothing to see here, lady. Mind your own business. It's between me and the dog and an adventure.
Yeah.
So, at the end of the day, I downloaded all the gigabytes of
yeah,
footage.
Yeah.
There was a couple of battery changes in there. The one on her chest definitely needs work.
Mm-hmm.
Like when she runs, the whole thing is just moving and you're like, okay, you know what? That's just too much.
Yeah.
But when you first get it situated, so it's getting people from the hips down,
yeah,
and she's standing there, you're getting like the forest, the trail, the flowers,
yes, yeah,
all that sort of stuff, right? So it looks pretty good, but then it just goes down from there. But when she starts running, then it's just like, oh, all over the place and a bit too much. So that may end up being a no-go, but still testing, still testing. The one on her back, when we got that nice and tight,
yeah,
she likes to shake every so often, so it'll move. And I found that it had to really tighten the GoPro so it stood up because she came ripping out under a tree and it hammered it.
Oh.
So you're seeing this, you know, you're seeing her where she's going, and then you're looking at the sky because it's pushed the GoPro face up.
Oh, okay, yeah, yeah.
So
yeah,
you
yeah,
got to come back and fix it again. But once I got all that down, I got some awesome footage of her and another dog, and they were just booting it through the woods.
Oh, yeah.
And so you see her head,
yeah,
you see her following this white dog, and they're just going everywhere. And you're like, how are they not, like, killing themselves? And then you see the one point where Tracy's trying to walk over. Like, there's a creek, a muddy creek.
Yeah.
And you have to step over a log. There's logs going across, a little log bridge. But then a tree's fallen across those log bridge. So as Tracy's stepping over, Athena hammers the mud.
Oh.
Right up Tracy's side. I'm just like, oops. So
that worked out perfectly.
So yeah, you know what? Like it definitely has. I'm thinking if I can get Athena enough footage to produce a film totally filmed by Athena.
Yeah.
No humans were used in the filming of this of this film.
Yeah.
That'd be kind of neat.
It would be.
But,
so you could see the portages and you could see the right, nose of the canoe. And
there was times where she goes running down the trail,
mm-hmm,
turns around, comes back straight at us and between us,
yeah,
that sort of stuff. So, yeah, and so if she's in the boat, she can turn around and look at us and see me paddling or whatever.
Yeah.
And yeah, on the portages, turn around and see us hauling yeah, gear as she's just running all willy-nilly everywhere.
Yeah. If she gets good enough, you can nickname her Tarantino.
Right? Athena Tarantino. It's got quite the ring to it, I must yeah, say. And the Oscar goes to a dog? Is this a joke? Anyway, so that was our little excitement on the weekend is getting all that. But, you know, it's all testing and stuff like
yeah,
that to see how yeah, it goes. And the weekend before I was out, I had my GoPros on the boat and testing a few of those things. And I saw the footage of me taking that little swift, watching the rocks on one side and not log
oh,
on the other.
And the camera points in the wrong direction.
And then into the water it went.
Yeah.
And
oh, it did. Yeah, but
oh,
it
yeah,
was leashed.
I got leashed, right?
Because yeah,
I've got the suction cup on the yeah, side. That's why I forgot it was totally there. Because it was on the side,
yeah,
out of sight, out of mind. But yeah, I got to start keeping a... Oh, well, whatever. Other than that, it's been crazy days at work mm-hmm, and all that sort of stuff.
I could get a GoPro harness for my cat.
See? way more than the cat. You need a really lightweight
yeah,
camera to put on your cat.
Well, I wonder
because they do that.
I've seen video, but yeah, it's not a GoPro.
No, no.
Cat wouldn't
no,
drag a GoPro on. So it must be a different, like just a,
it's just
like
a tiny little.
Tiny cam.
Like a button
yeah,
cam or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Because I've seen them do it with hawks, bald eagles, and and cats and stuff like that. The bird ones are really cool. Mm-hmm. You can see the bird, like, they've got it, like, chest-mounted or something, because it's just always fixed, and the birds do look around, so it's not attached to their head.
Yeah.
That's kind of neat, to that perspective.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm just out now, just with all the different attachments I have. Like, I got a chest mount, a head mount, and I got a clip that I can clip it onto the strap of my backpack.
Okay.
That sort of thing, or face backwards to see who's coming after me.
Yeah.
And I like my mine. I can hook up my phone to it as a display.
Okay.
So I can see where it's pointing and stuff. Mm-hmm. And then I can, like, hit record.
On the phone.
Only thing is when you record, you lose the
screen goes
off. Preview.
Yeah.
That sucks.
Imagine it would kill a lot of battery if you kept it on, though, right?
On your phone it would.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, anyway, good times. Got a couple of things, not a ton of stuff to talk about, but a couple of bigger things to talk about tonight. Because it's a time of season when everybody's trying to buy stuff, and you think of new gear, and
exactly
how do you know what to buy, and all that sort of stuff. And one of the biggest things, two things I would always told on canoe trips is keep your feet dry as much as possible, and get a good sleep system.
Yes.
Because if you're walking around with really wet, uncomfortable...
Yeah, your feet are going to get waterlogged and then injured and so on.
And you're not comfortable. You just, And then sleeping, if you're not having a good sleep.
Yeah, it's going to be horrible.
It's going to be horrible as well. So Gear Lab is a company that tests a whole bunch of outdoor gear and whatnot. They've tested 30 of the top water shoes from Astral, Speedo, Palm, and a bunch of other companies to find the best options to help keep your feet protected during long days on the water. And this goes beyond just their picks. They also talk about what goes into the testing.
Okay.
What you should be looking for and all that. So I figure, you know what? Let's get into all of that sort of stuff tonight and just chat about that for a bit. A good pair of water shoes offers some support, good traction on slippery and wet surfaces. Also protect your feet from objects you may encounter on your aquatic adventures, including rocks, broken shells, glass, any other debris, twigs. I first started out with a pair of shoes.
Mm-hmm.
Then I said, forget that. I'm going to go to a pair of sandals, open-toed sandals.
Yeah.
That did not last very long. I went to a pair of Keens. Then I went to another pair of Keens that had, or sorry, my Salomons. Because the Keens I was looking at, nobody had them. So I went to the Salomons, and they had the mesh on the sides.
Okay, yeah.
To help keep the bigger sticks and stuff out. Mm-hmm. And now I've gone into a pair of Astral Wrestlers 2.0s.
Okay. I think that's what I got when we were
at the Brewers, right? The Astral Brewers?
Yeah, I think that's, when we were at the Hamilton show.
Yeah, yeah. So, your shoes will evolve over time the more you do it, finding out what you need for your type of paddling. Gear Lab uses over 15 comparative tests to assess comfort, traction, warmth, versatility, sensitivity, and quality of construction. They even wore different shoes on each foot to see how the performance compared while swimming, kayaking, paddleboarding, and canyoneering. So this goes on because a lot of people, though, like if you're going down the Grand Canyon, there's spots where you pull up to the side.
Over
and you can go down some of these little canyons, right? Yeah. So there's anything like that and you're, traipsing down rivers and streams and stuff like that. The women's Astral Loyak and the men's Astral Loyak AC are the two best options for most people on this comparisons that they did. They have incredible comfort, traction, and everyday style. If you want the best lightweight, fast drying budget options, get the Speedo Surf Knit Pro for men and the DLG JPA lightweight for women. DLG JPA. We're searching
all over.
Apparently that is the name. It's just six letters.
Yeah.
And you're trying to look Dulgajapa. Yeah. No, DLG JPA. That's the company. So, best overall water shoes for men, according to their little... They did the seven best water shoes. So, for men, it's the Astral Loyak AC. Reasons to buy. Flexible design, sticky traction, great drainage, and comfortable fit. because you don't want to be sitting there in a shoe filled with water.
No, you want it to drain well, drain quick.
Mm-hmm. Reasons to avoid: not warm and durability issues noted.
Hmm.
So if you're getting into fall season or spring,
oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Well,
they're not warm.
Sure, because your feet are going to get wet, so yeah. Of course they're not going to be warm.
Yeah. Well, these are all the tests that they do, right?
Yeah.
So if people, that'll just throw some socks on with that. No, you know. Astro Loyak AC reigns supreme in versatility, seamlessly transitioning from water activities to social gatherings. Not only does it perform exceptionally well in aquatic environments, but it also has a stylish design suitable for casual events. In the water, it provides a glove-like fit with excellent drainage. The Flex Grip outsole adheres well to various surfaces, including slick rocks, while delivering ample support for leisurely beach or town walks. The thin neutral soles provide a sensitive yet protective experience, enhancing balance on uneven terrain and ensuring excellence in swimming performance. I mean, and when we're doing our canoe trips, sometimes we got to get out and lie in the canoe.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And you need that grip on the rocks that you're, bounding from rock to rock. And
I've had Astrals for quite a few years, and I hated that they were wearing it, which is why I had to buy a pair last winter. And they were one of the things that always amazed me is that they had a grip that just never seemed to fail.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was able to walk on pretty much anything. And, you're always still careful, but like I never felt like they were going to fail me for grippiness.
Yeah.
And I was sad when they finally did fail the stitching. They were sun bleached and their stitching was starting to come out, and I had the sole taped on with duct tape on one foot, and so it was one of those things. It's like, okay, time to retire them.
I've had my Wrestlers for two seasons now.
So, oh yeah?
Yeah. And I've been using them all year round.
Yeah.
Winter as well.
What I liked about the Astrals that I had were, like, you could sit in the canoe and dip your foot in and pinch your toes so that your foot would pull away from the shoe, and you could just dip and rinse, and there's a big enough hole at the back that everything washed right out.
Yeah.
So if you did get sand or gravel, I could wash it out, and so it was really good shoe for that, for drainage, for keeping stuff out. It had a decent mesh, and it dried really quick. The mesh was, and I think that's what we're going to be talking about later with the DGPJW, whatever.
ABCDEFGs.
it's the new material they're using for a lot of water shoes because it does dry so quickly.
Yeah.
Which is important if you're on portages and stuff like that. Like my old ones, by the end of a portage, they were like almost dry. It always amazed me.
Well, even still, like, if you get to camp at the end of the day, you change into something else.
Yeah, you're going to change.
And you put those ones out to dry. Yeah. You don't want to be putting wet ones back on.
Not in the morning, no. Have to. No.
Right. Although it excels in functionality in water and urban settings, some limitations exist. It offers minimal insulation if recreating in chilly waters. Though you can wear a neoprene sock to improve warmth, the mesh upper is not as durable, particularly in abrasive rock environments. If you're seeking a water shoe that performs well in the water and transitions effortlessly to the street after a full day, the Loyak AC is the perfect choice. The Astral Brewer 2.0, which is what you got,
I think so,
is a great alternative for those wanting more hiking capabilities from their water shoe.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what they say for the men. The best overall water shoes for men is the Astral Loyak AC. For women, it's the Astral Loyak for women.
Yeah. And when they say Loyak, there's also the Hayak, which is basically a high-top water shoe. It gives you a little bit of ankle protection for barking your ankles off rocks and so on.
Ah, wussies. reasons to buy: fantastic traction, minimalist and low profile, comfortable and snug fit, versatile use. Reasons to avoid: durability is subpar, not very warm.
I wish they would stop talking about warmth. Your feet are in water. It's like, say, hey, when you wear these shoes in the water, your feet are going to get wet. It's like, thanks, Captain right? Obvious. So, yeah, so like, your feet are going to get cold. Like, they're not an insulated shoe. They're meant for summer use. Like, you're not going to go snowshoeing in them.
Well, not with that attitude. just for that, I'm buying a pair, and I'm going snowshoeing next year. The Astral Low Yak is lightweight, high-performing, and looks great. The Bomber's outsole offers some of the best traction we've tested, with a flexible design that does well on slippery rocks and uneven surfaces. We tested it while swimming, paddling, and exploring on land, where it performed excellently. I like the shoe's look. It's stylish enough to wear out for food and drinks around the campfire or beachside bar, our tester remarks.
I'm looking at the picture of the Low Yak men's. It's a nice looking shoe.
Oh, yeah. They're definitely nice
looking.
They're
kind of dressy looking.
Yeah.
Well, once you get mud on them, though. And
well, you just rinse that off in the cold water.
Yeah.
While this contender has the look and feel of a shoe, it performs like a neoprene booty. While the Low Yak boasts many pluses, it has its drawbacks. Given the canvas uppers and snug fit, it's not a very warm shoe. It's also hard to layer an insulative sock, so they are limited to only warmer days on the water. So you're not wearing this into the fall.
No.
Or starting early spring. Exactly. You better have another pair for that. There was also noticeable wear after just a few months of testing. We love the stylish look and performance of the women's Low Yak. It does well in the water, out of the water, and around town. If you need more hikeability out of your water shoe, the Palm Gradient 3.0 or Astral Wrestler 2.0, which I have, are almost as comfortable as the Low Yak, but with more burly construction. Neither are as sensitive, but both offer a hardier shoe for side hikes and a rougher terrain.
Mm-hmm.
Which, yeah, I have no problems walking around in those things. Portages are awesome in those things. Best men's bang for the buck. The Speedo Surf Knit Pro. Reasons to buy. Great flexibility and sensitivity. Fast to get on and off. Very comfortable without socks. See, I've taken to actually wearing a pair of socks. I used to never wear socks in my my water shoes.
Yeah.
But after a while, you get that blister.
Yes.
And it's like, what? I don't have time for that. So I got the ankle socks.
Yeah. I did the same thing.
I put those on and wear them in there, and so much more comfortable.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Yeah.
It's not a thick sock, but it's enough to stop the rubbing on
you. Yeah, it stops the friction. The shoe rubs against the sock, and the sock sticks to your foot, so there's not as much rubbing
on the actual skin. Yeah. Reasons to avoid. Little protection against sharp terrain, very little insulation in cold water.
Do your feet get wet?
Maybe.
There's no void. Your feet get wet.
We tested several inexpensive slip-on models, and the Speedo Surf Knit Pro stood out for its comfort and excellent feel. Unlike lace-up shoes, these water shoes are easy to take on and off. They performed significantly better on trails and pavement compared to other budget-friendly models. While the Surf Knit performed well on short hikes, it's not for rugged terrain. Unlike sturdier water shoes designed for challenging hikes, like the Astral Brewer or Low Yak, the Surf Knit offers less protection from sharp objects on the trail. For instance, testers felt twigs through the soles when walking on logs. If they get on and off that easily, I'd hate to sink up to your knee in mud.
Oh, yeah, it'll pull it right off.
Right?
But these, when you look at the picture of them, they look like something you just wear to the beach or something like that.
Yeah, day out from your local river
or maybe just around camp or something like that when you're up and down to the beach or doing whatever.
Going out on the lake for a fish or something.
I don't know that I'd want to do a portage with them.
The thin sole provides a more barefoot feel when wading in water, but comes at the cost of reduced protection. Additionally, the Surf Knit's suitability for everyday wear is limited. On the bright side, the Surf Knit is a great choice for beach activities and paddleboarding due to its affordability and sensitivity. It excels as a budget-friendly option when feeling the ground and surfaces underfoot is a priority. These are the ones I've seen for surfboards and paddleboards.
Exactly. Right?
If you're a stand-up paddleboarder, this is up your alley.
Mm-hmm.
Best women's bang for the buck. the DLG JPA Lightweight Quick Drying. Reasons to buy? Quick drying. Lightweight. Affordable. Reasons to avoid? Less durable. Small debris can enter through drainage holes. Our favorite budget option for women is the DLG JPA Lightweight Shoe. Comfortable water slipper has a cinch closure, which dries quickly in the sun, even in humid climates. It's lightweight and can handle short hikes quite decently. It also tested the men's DLG JPA, which scores similarly. However, durability is lacking, as one might expect from a budget shoe of this caliber. Thin mesh showed some fraying after our test period, so take care when encountering sharp sticks or rocks. Larger mesh openings are also prone to taking on small rocks or sand, and we all know, also noticed that these are not as supportive as some of the more structured shoes in our tests. The cinch elastic stretches out after some use, too. However, if you need water shoes for light-duty use, the DLG JPA will fit the bill. If you want more performance for a low price, see the NRS Kicker Wet Shoe, which is not a great out-of-water option, but performs pretty well during water activities for a good price. Because, I mean, sometimes you're, especially if you're getting into it, well, I'm not going all the time. I just want something I can put on my feet to get in the boat.
Yeah.
Right? Then that sounds like that's for you. Best water shoe for paddling, the NRS Paddle Wet Shoe. Reasons to buy, all-day comfort, neoprene offers warmth, great traction. The Warmiewick Warmerson.
Yeah.
Reasons to avoid, lacks support, slow drying, and lacks drainage. The NRS Paddle Wet Shoe is a top choice among our male paddling reviewers. The neoprene booty features a soft fleece-lined interior and a flexible neoprene upper, creating a snug fit that keeps bare feet warm, ideal for water activities like swimming, kayaking, and paddleboarding. Its sticky rubber sole grips rocks securely, boosting confidence or even shorelines. Whether relaxing on your boat or exploring rocky areas, this booty is a top pick for paddling.
I'm looking at a picture of them. They're low profile. They look like they have a little bit of armoring or foamy outer right along the edges of the foot. So it looks like if you're hopping in and out of a whitewater kayak or something like that, it's going to give you the support. And from my time in and when I did some whitewater kayaking, it's if you have too big of a shoe, you're really having a hard time getting your toes and your feet into the nose.
Yeah.
Right? And then it becomes uncomfortable. Your feet go to sleep and so on. So it's ideal to have. I used to use a scuba diving neoprene booty.
Yep.
Because it was just very flexible and it served the purpose of being able to get my feet into the nose of the kayak.
Yeah, I got a pair of those that I'll use.
But these look nice. They have a nice look to them and they look like they're comfortable.
The best water shoe for river adventures, the Palm Gradient 3.0 boots. Reasons to buy, superior traction, high quality construction, all around foot protection. Reasons to avoid, not lightweight, not cheap.
Yeah.
The Palm Gradient 3.0 stood out to our testers for its exceptional protection and traction, featuring the ultra-sticky Vibram sole with an aggressive multi-directional lug pattern. It clings to slick rocks and digs into muddy riverbanks with ease. One tester remarked, "If I ever have to hike out of a steep river canyon, I hope I'm wearing these." The welded rubber reinforced heel and neoprene ankle cuff provide excellent coverage and protection, making the Gradient a top pick for wading across rivers and tackling rough, rocky terrain. However, all this added protection comes at a cost. The Gradient is one of the heavier options we have tested. I've heard that the Wrestlers are heavy compared to some of the other shoes. Mm-hmm. But
slightly heavier when they're wet.
I don't know. I wouldn't mind a little bit of weight if it's. It's not like you're adding 10 pounds to your feet.
Did you look at the photos of the?
Yeah.
It looks like a sturdy boot.
It does,
and it's designed to get wet.
Right.
So there you go.
There are plenty of lighter shoes in the lineup. None match Gradient's level of rugged protection. The Astral Wrestler 2.0 comes closest in performance, but weighs only slightly less and offers noticeably less insulation and support. That's why my feet are cold.
Because they're wet.
And I got flat feet now. Despite their rugged build, we were impressed by how comfortable the Palm Gradients felt. The dual-density EVA midsole provides a plush, cushioned ride, making them surprisingly pleasant for long hikes and extended walks over sharp, uneven terrain. That said, if your plans involve more casual outings like beach days or tropical getaways, the Gradient 3.0 might feel like overkill. Yeah, if you're just going to the beach, these are not for you.
But if you're doing a far northern trip and you're going to be doing like, if there's like, who was it? Frank
Wolf?
Frank Wolf. Remember he had an 80-kilometer portage?
Oh, was that the Grand Portage or something?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a couple big ones up
there.
So
one of these, pair of these boots would be good for that.
It would be perfect for that. Yeah. The warmth, robust construction could be more than you need if you just go into the beach. In those cases, a lighter, more versatile option like the Astral Low Yak would be a better fit, offering a lower profile design ideal for both water adventures and everyday wear. But if you're prepared for serious river missions filled with rocks, ravines, and rapids, the Gradient 3.0 is a standout choice.
There you go.
The men's most versatile water shoes. Dun, 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 dun. The Astral Brewer 2.0, which Derek has. And we'll be expecting a good review on them this year.
If I ever get them on my feet.
If you ever get them on your feet, if you can find them. Reasons to buy. Adaptable for thicker insulative layers, which makes your feet warm. Lots of uses. Stable construction. Flexible, yet supportive. Reasons to avoid. A little slippery and lacks durability.
I did not see that review when I bought them.
Did Derek do a review on the shoes? No, he slipped into the river. Took them off, swore, threw them into the woods. The Astral Brewer 2.0 performs on land and water. A cozy, adaptable construction makes it flexible enough to accommodate additional insulation layers for outdoor conditions. Of all the models tested, it is an all-terrain warrior. One staff member wore these on a 6-day rafting trip on the Colorado River and then hiked from the river to the rim of the Grand Canyon.
There you go.
See? You got a good pair there. Tread sticks well on uneven and technical terrain and offers the protection you'd expect from a top performer. The sole is responsive yet flexible, providing an excellent balance of sensitivity and protection. If you often go from the water to the land in your adventures, this is our top recommendation and one you must check out. While these shoes are excellent for most water-related activities, they aren't as warm as paddling booties with heavy insulation. On the slick, slippery ground, the smaller lugs wouldn't grip as well as other models tested, but they did well on rocky and sharp surfaces. Caveats aside, the Brewer 2.0 is still a favorite because its design works well in and out of the water, and it scored similarly to the Astral Low Yak AC, which we highly recommend. If you provide traction, if you prioritize traction above all else, check out the Astral High Yak. Its traction was exceptionally impressive, though it was less comfortable as the Brewer or Low Yak. So those are the ones that they tested, and those are the ones that they said.
Yeah.
So my wrestlers are, and they're saying they're a decent one, and your Brewers are in here saying they're, but while you're slipping into the water, I'll be standing there waving as you go sailing on by.
My old Astrals, they were the best. They had the softest of rubber on the sole, and it was amazing. It's like they stuck to everything. Kind of reminds me of people who do fly fishing. They have it's like a felt bottom of the boot, and it helps grip on rocks and rivers when you're fishing. So it
see, when I go fly fishing, I don't use that sort of stuff.
No,
I just grab my fly rod, pair of pants, pair of sneakers, and I go.
Thank God you're wearing pants.
I think I was wearing pants. So those are the ones they say. And then this is the part I got interested in is like, what goes into testing all this stuff?
Yeah.
So how they at Gear Lab, they've been reviewing water shoes for years, logging many days in the real world. They use 6 performance metrics: comfort, traction, warmth, versatility, sensitivity, and quality of construction. They give the shoes out to their review teams, and they've traveled nationwide, Pacific Northwest to the coast of California, raging rivers of the Grand Canyon. They test each pair in all kinds of conditions and weather, wading up and down frigid meltwater streams to freeze their feet, apparently. Sauntering along sandy beaches, stumbling over mossy shorelines, tested them in an 18-foot gear boat, wore different shoes on each foot to observe how they compared in performance.
That's interesting.
Right? Makes sense, though, when you start hearing about this, mm-hmm. right? Dissected the construction and features while subjecting them to over 15 objective and comparative tests. And using this information, we can decipher the pros and cons of each product. They also tested on various boats, from stand-up paddle boards, kayaks, canoes, that sort of thing. And finally, we handed out shoes to fellow water lovers to gather their input to help select award winners and provide expert recommendations. So you get people like us who they say, hey, try these out. Yeah. Call them back and go, we lost Derek.
He slipped.
He was wearing that one. Yeah. I give that an F. Wait a minute. We lost Derek. We give that one an A.
Hey.
Wait a minute. Then they say, why should you buy a water shoe? Why should you not just go use your old sneakers or something, which I used to do when
that's
I first
what
started.
I used to do, too.
Yeah. Water shoes are closed-toe shoes designed to protect your feet while recreating on water bodies. They are designed to breathe, keep your feet cool on hot days, and drain to keep your feet from sitting in soggy shoes. Special rubber on the outsole will give you confidence on slippery surfaces, while water's insulating properties will help keep your feet warm. So it doesn't matter what you do, you know, you'll get the pair of shoes for any water lover's gear closet. Water shoes offer safety and comfort on slippery surfaces, which, you know, safety third. And whether you're snorkeling or your favorite reef, exploring a new canyon or adventuring with your favorite watercraft, a pair of water shoes is always a good purchase. And like I say, I started with my sneakers, an old pair of sneakers.
Yeah.
Then I went to a pair of sandals, and then I went to water shoes. Like after a while, and then from there you start to realize, oh, these would be good if I'm doing this.
Yeah,
but I need
exactly
a little bit extra to do
and
that.
And you probably, I assume you bought an oversized pair for when you have your dry suit on.
Oh my, yeah. Then you get into the types. They get into the types of water shoes. First step to purchasing a solid water shoe is understanding the type you'll find on the market. And you got to take a moment to consider what you're buying your water shoes for, the weather you're likely to encounter, any features you're going to need to best suit your adventures. Like, if you're just doing local rivers, like our local river here, you're not going to need something for going across the Northwest Territories.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to be a different type of shoe, boot, that sort of thing.
Did we ever ask Wes Hansen what he wore when he did the Northwest Passage? Because, like, he had dry suit on, but did he ever talk about what... Because they're in two-man kayaks, and I'm just wondering, like,
think we actually
did. I'm curious. Because that's some...
Quick, get him on the line.
Because that would be a combination of, like, very cold temperatures and little movement. So you're inside, your feet are inside the kayak for long periods of time in cold, cold water. And it's radiating into the kayak underneath you. So I'm wondering, like, what they did to keep their feet warm as they, because the feet would be the closest to the water type thing.
Well, I think they would have warm stuff inside the booties. And then maybe a neoprene like boot or something.
Yeah, like a fleece sock, the dry suit, then the oversized booty, and I'm guessing.
Yeah. So they got different types here. You have to understand that, you know, you can narrow down your search for your best shoe. Neoprene booties. The booty may be best if you love swimming or surfing or immersing your feet in cold water for long periods. Neoprene, this type of water shoe is comfortable and warm, designed to fit snugly like a glove. The neoprene absorbs and holds water in its porous fabric. Your body warms that water in the fabric, acting like insulation. These boots are incredibly comfortable as they are lightweight and flexible and designed to aid in efficient swimming. Also good if you're like on a paddle board, you know, because it sticks a bit to the paddle board, so you're good for that.
That would be important.
Yes. A low-profile paddling shoe may look like a regular shoe with water-specific features that offer more support and drainage than a neoprene booty. It is more protective and stable, making a versatile choice from going from water to land-based activities. Because you're not going to want to wander a lot in a neoprene booty.
No, it looks kind of silly if you're going into, like, post-paddling trip. You go, hey, I got to go pick up, you know, some water at the grocery store for the drive home or something. And
you walk around in neoprene booties.
What is wrong with that guy?
Right? There's something wrong with that guy there. So it's the low profile paddling shoes are constructed with a low profile minimalist design that is flexible and sensitive. Thin soles make it ideal for situations where you need to fit inside a small boat like a kayak. Also has an outsole that is protective enough to perform on land. Water focused running and hiking shoes. Another category is the water shoe built for running and hiking. People who like to swim and run or find themselves hiking in a swampy or waterlogged environment may want to look for this type of shoe. Category is a hybrid between regular running and traditional paddling shoes. Features more support than a paddling shoe and better drainage than a runner or hiker. This would be good like on a paddle marathon sort of thing where you got portages too, right?
Yeah.
And then there's the attributes to consider when you're buying your shoes. Along with determining the type of water shoe you need, there are attributes for each shoe type to consider before your purchase. Depending on how and where you'll be using your new pair of water shoes, there are a few construction details that you'll want to consider while you search for your pair. Oh, you're going to love the first one here.
I know.
Warmth. Are you planning on recreating in cold weather most of the year? Then you'll want to look for a shoe that offers insulation.
Yes.
Cold or frozen feet aren't only annoying while exploring, but can be dangerous. Neoprene booties are a great choice as a neoprene insulates when wet. The type of traction. Slipping on mossy rocks is exactly what we want to avoid when purchasing a water shoe. Therefore, it's important to consider the different type of traction patterns and rubber used. Water shoes are designed to stick to surfaces like the bottom of your wet boat, mossy rocks, slick sandstone, or slippery logs. Consider protection. How protective does your water shoe need to be? Will you be hiking for long days in wet canyons or just wearing them out on the beach? A stiffer, more protective shoe is best for long days over rocky surfaces and portages sort of thing. While a more flexible, less protective shoe offers more sensitivity, better swimming performance. If you're into boat sports, you won't be on your feet as much. A less protective, more flexible shoe is better than a rigid, more protective shoe. But if you like to spend your days hiking along water bodies, seek out a more rigid and protective outsole. See, but if you're, it depends where you're, like if you're canoe tripping.
Yep.
Yeah, I've been on some portages where, yeah, I'm going for something a bit more protective.
It's a bit more protective. And if you're like, if you're doing a whitewater trip, like you're going to want to have something that ties on because you don't want to lose a, if you dump in a rapids, you don't want your shoes to fly off like slip-ons, right? So you're going to want something that's going to tie on and be like, I've been in some water where it's like, yeah, I'm glad I have lace-up shoes because I don't want them to fly off in a rapid, right?
Right.
So, but if you're just out for a quick day paddle, then a slip-on water shoe is perfectly fine.
Yeah.
To stop yourself from stepping on sharp rocks and sticks type thing.
Consider durable construction. You probably noticed that some water shoes are constructed for durability while others are minimalistic and light. Considering how you will use your shoe will help you determine how durable it needs to be. you find yourself boating, a simple low-profile kayaking boot with a neoprene and mesh construction will do the trick. If you're boating, you probably won't walk around too often on sharp surfaces. Well, depends.
Yeah, poor dogs.
However, if you love to wade through rivers, look for a boot with thick upper construction and a thicker outsole, as it will make the impact of crunching over sharp surfaces. Whether you're a fair-weather beachgoer or a whitewater kayaker, a high-quality water shoe will make your day much more enjoyable.
100%.
Now that you've started your research and know what to consider, you're on your way to finding the best water shoe for your needs. We hope the hours of work they've put into testing each product and the advice for buying have helped you with your amphibious ambitions.
Amphibious ambitions.
Huh? There's a lot of good information there.
It is. It
you
is.
You know, like, and I know a lot of people that are looking for new shoes and stuff like that, yeah, for the summer and everything. So this is the time everybody's starting to, you know, the sales are going to start happening and,
yeah,
you know, you can start doing your research and find out what exactly ones you want. I, on the other hand, don't need a new pair this year. That was a long topic tonight.
It was.
I got another long topic.
Is it long?
Yeah. This is a long. So we see all these videos of all these people doing, going over waterfalls.
Running, yeah, yes,
and
yeah,
running like massive rapids and in their kayaks and stuff, yeah, and canoes and doing these long, not necessarily high waterfalls, yeah, but long.
Technical.
Yeah. Waterfalls with you know, like a 100-foot drop over you
20
know,
small sections.
Over, yeah, yeah, a bunch of sections, right? And everybody, this is so great. This is fantastic. Now we got all these new things. We can do all this sort of stuff, new technology. And all. Well, let me tell you about Al Fawcett. Al Fawcett never met a 100-foot fall. He wouldn't run in a dugout log.
Highly technical.
So as you sit there looking at all this new gear, take a look at a fallen tree and think, hey, I could save some bucks. As a financial strategy, there's a certain logic to taking bets that you are about to die. If you survive, you've just made a bundle of money. And if you die, losing the bet is the least of your
exactly
worries.
Well, I don't have to pay that out.
Welcome inside the enterprising mind of Al Fawcett. A lumberjack turned daredevil who was the first to run a 104-foot Sunset Falls on the Skykomish River back in 1926. Yeah, this ain't new, people.
This is a long
this
time
ago.
This
is 100 years ago,
yeah,
now.
Yeah.
Well, 99 years ago. Got 99 problems and Al's isn't one of them. Fawcett survived the plunge in a 32-foot spruce log he'd hollowed out. Now, we're talking, we got 15, 16-foot canoes.
It's a 32-foot
spruce. It's twice as long as mine.
Yeah.
He'd hollowed out, reinforced with steel cladding. It drops 104 feet over the course of 275 feet and is mined with all manner of deadly hazards. The entire right side is a hungry sieve. On the left is that boulder sprouting a huge rooster tail as the river plows into it at about 60 miles per hour. It's hard to say what lies under the frothing mass of white foam. It's not good. Fawcett's blithe assessment of the gauntlet only proves how little he knew about what he was getting into. There's nothing to be afraid of, for I have studied the dangers carefully, and I believe I can negotiate these falls where 20 men have lost their lives, Fawcett told the Everett News sport reporter Herbert Scoop Toole.
His nickname was Scoop.
Oh, he's a
reporter. Yeah, I know, but it's like another 1920s type nickname. Hey, Scoop.
Hey, Scoop. Who doubled as his publicist.
Oh, there you go.
That Sunday, May 30th, 1926, he was more concerned with freeloaders in the crowd than details of his craft or the whitewater gauntlet which was preparing to run. Newspapers estimated 3,500 to 5,000 people had come to watch him cheat death. So he was trying to sell tickets.
Yeah.
Right? That's a private. But what had happened was, you want to come up here and watch, people started cutting through the woods.
Oh.
So they didn't have to pay.
Yeah.
Totally pissed him off.
Yeah.
When he shoved off, the Skykomish Queen lumbered into the current, gathered speed, and shot down the slide. The vessel slipped by the rooster tail, disappeared for a long count, and finally emerged unscathed in the pool below. Fawcett popped his head out and waved triumphantly. Sunset wasn't attempted again until 2008. When local kayaking legend Rob McKibben ran it on his lunch break, blowing his spray skirt and swimming at the bottom. Tyler Brandt claimed the first clean kayak descent the following year. So from 1926, it wasn't run again until 2008. Hey to B, Al. When Toole caught up with him, Fawcett told the newspaperman that the line to his homemade air tank separate. What?
Air tank?
Apparently he had an air tank with a line on it, so when he went under, he could breathe. Well, it had separated, and he was forced to hold his breath as best he could against the crushing water. The water came so fast it crammed down his nostrils and throat, and yet at no time was I afraid of those treacherous falls, not even when the water seemed to be crushing the very life out of me. The career of the world's most prolific whitewater daredevil was underway.
There you go.
According to some accounts, Hollywood producers offered him $5,000 to run the falls in a canoe. Legend persists, even though they took pains to debunk it the morning after the stunt, noting that Everett News that no deal had been closed with any movie concern, and Fawcett will derive no funds from that source. But he wasn't skunked completely. According to his great-grandson, those bets on whether he would survive paid off to the tune of about $1,500. Now, $1,500 100 years ago was a
good
chunk.
That's a lot.
He immediately set his sights on a bigger prize, announcing plans to run the 268-foot Snoqualmie Falls near Seattle, followed by Niagara. County commissioners denied him permission to run the Snoqualmie on the grounds that there were no fence to prevent spectators from falling over the edge.
Oh.
Sounds like a
They weren't
problem.
Worried about him. They were worried about the spectators.
Right? So Fawcett settled for a 28-foot Eagle Falls instead. The drop on the South Fork Skykomish, a few miles upstream of Sunset, and despite its relatively modest height, its array of midstream rocks presented some challenges to the daredevil. He dropped it in another homemade craft, this one a 16-foot cigar-shaped affair, reinforced with steel hoops like a barrel. He ran the falls on Labor Day, 1926. His strategy? Close the hatch and let her rip.
Yeah, it's a good plan. Well thought out.
A hatch.
Yes.
So this is not a canoe any longer.
No, it's a submarine.
This is... It's like the barrels going over Niagara Falls.
Yeah.
Midway down, the contraption pinned on a rock. After some time, he opened the hatch and hollered to his friends on shore, who eventually dislodged the craft with pike poles. About 400 people witnessed the event. Next up was Spokane Falls, a pair of diversion dams in the city's downtown with a combined drop of 146 feet. Fawcett built a 15-foot spruce dugout for the June 1st, 27 stunt, reinforced it with iron bands, and fixed oak roots to the bow to deflect impacts.
There you go.
Which, so you're thinking about this basically, like a whole tree.
Yeah.
But if he the branches that he had at the front would bounce him
like
off
a bumper.
Bumper boat. He christened it the 777 of Seattle. Auspicious craft was fully enclosed and fitted with a trap door, but on the day of this stunt, Fawcett and his helpers couldn't get it across the powerful eddy line and into the river's main flow. It spun four times, drifted to a halt, as an estimated 20 to 40,000 people watched. Fawcett then opened the hatch, asked for a rope, pulling himself hand over hand into the current, which seized the boat and spun it wildly. Water gushed in, filling the boat perhaps half full. Fawcett called for another rope, but it was too late. The current snatched his vessel and propelled it into the upper falls. The boat shot nearly 20 feet into the air, then flipped end over end, and before landing at the bottom of the falls, it disappeared for nearly 1 minute. The crowd shouted less than reassuring comments back and forth.
He's a goner.
He won't make it, and you'll never see him again. Yet the boat did reappear, only to get sucked into another whirlpool and spun from the south to the north end of the river, whirling like a spinning top for a good 10 minutes.
That's this hilarious.
Is exciting.
Well, back in the day, it would have been. This would have been high entertainment.
Right? So Fawcett finally escaped the craft.
Yeah, and they. It's just a dugout log.
Yeah.
Right?
Rescuers fished him out of the pool between the two falls. His boat, the Lucky 777, spun there for hours before finally sliding over the lower falls and smashing into pieces. Oh. Fawcett himself suffered lacerations and a concussion. Fawcett ran the 177 South Falls in a canvas shell stuffed full of inner tubes.
Interesting. He's getting more creative.
Right? Fawcett vowed to return to Spokane Falls, but never did. Even he wasn't that crazy. But he wasn't finished either. The following March, he rode another spruce dugout over a rain-swollen Willamette Falls of south of Portland, Oregon. The awkward craft slipped sideways over the first 20-foot ledge and was held under for 3 minutes. 150 feet beyond the falls, the white boat shot out of the foam and spray for a moment, then crashed into another curtain of foam and was lost again. At the foot of the rapids, the canoe appeared again, turning over and over. Fawcett soon emerged, battered, triumphant, and talking about his next big stunt.
It's crazy.
You'd think he's making, like, fortune with this stuff, like the Evel Knievel of water, right?
And he's not making much.
No. And this is like the late 1920s.
Yeah, late 20s, early 30s, yeah.
He found the perfect venue in 177-foot South Falls in Oregon. It offered a clean drop of headline-grabbing height. Best of all, it was on private property, meaning he could make sure everyone who watched the stunt paid for the privilege. He struck up a partnership with landowner Daniel Geisler, who already had some experience in the promotion game, charging people a whopping 50 cents a head to watch him push junk cars over the edge of the falls.
Oh, wow.
So he's about to go over this falls.
And there's cars underwater.
He's dug those cars out.
Maybe not.
Maybe not. Might have missed a few things. Geisler liked Fawcett's plan, but was worried about liability. So the two men made a deal. Al would buy the falls and surrounding land, own it for 1 day, and Geisler would buy it back after the stunt, or inherit it in Al's wills if things went really bad. Fawcett took a completely new approach to the July 1st, 1928 stunt, using a small canvas boat stuffed full of inner tubes to make sure it would clear the rocks and enter the water nose first. Fawcett had run a guide cable from the top to the bottom, but on the way down the craft snagged on a splice in the cable. The line snapped, the craft landed flat like a belly flop. Fawcett suffered 2 sprained ankles, a broken wrist, 2 fractured ribs, internal injuries, and a partridge in a pear tree. Worse, his manager skipped town with the gate.
Oh.
An estimated $5,000.
Oh.
Way to go, Scoop. Fawcett didn't see a penny.
Oh, no.
Fawcett ended his waterfall career in 1929 with uncharacteristically smooth descent of 212-foot Shoshone Falls in Idaho and Celilo Falls on the Columbia River. His waterfall jumping system was finally dialed, but the Daredevil game just wasn't penciling out. Gate receipts just wouldn't cover his construction expenses and hospital bills. Fawcett continued to tinker with plans and talk about the big one, Niagara, but he never ran another waterfall. He died in bed in 1948 at the age of 68 years old.
Jeez.
Way to go, Al Fawcett.
Yeah, not how I expected him to die.
No. I was reading this article about him, this story. I'm thinking, oh, well, that's the end of him. Oh, that's the end of him. Oh, that's the end of him. Ooh, I wonder what's going to... Oh, no, just kept on going.
He was in his late 40s when he was doing this.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm 28. If he died in 48, 1928, yeah. He would have been 40.
Yeah.
48.
Yeah, 28. 48.
Yeah.
40, he's...
40, yeah, 40. Plus 20, yeah. Whew. 48 years old and he's doing this.
I know.
Just goes to show... You're never too old, Derek. Bet you he was wearing water shoes. All right, I got one more thing to talk about.
Okay.
We've been talking about Australia a lot lately with its paddling sports and getting everybody into it and different plans and stuff like that. Paddle Australia has unveiled its new strategic plan, the Paddle Forward 32. Which sets up a bold new vision for paddling in Australia, designed to create a home of paddle sports by creating a world-class sport, a vibrant, adventure-focused lifestyle, along with a community where everyone belongs. Paddle Forward 32 is more than just a plan. It's of movement. Paddle Australia's president and triple Olympian Andrew Trim said the new blueprint is for the sport, is designed to connect every paddler across the country. Doesn't matter what level you're at.
Yeah.
Paddle Forward 32 is a call for every paddler, partner, and stakeholder to join in building a sport and lifestyle that inspires, unites, and thrives for generations to come. For us, success will require the sport to reach more people than ever before, welcome new participants, as well as connect with broader communities. As Australia looks forward to 2032 and the incredible opportunity hosting an Olympic and Paralympic Games will present, Paddle Australia is uniting at all levels to shape the future of paddling in Australia. Our redefined purpose is to support, inspire, and develop all paddlers, fostering a sense of belonging to our world-leading sport and lifestyle, he says.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think we hinted at this when we talked about some of the river travel and clearing the gators out of the river for the 2032 Olympics.
Right. And also with the big ICF get together that they had.
Yeah.
Following the Paris 2024 Olympic in Paralympic Games, where Paddle Australia achieved its best ever results with 4 golds, 2 silvers, 2 bronze medals, Trim said now was the right time to reset and look at how the sport can achieve success more broadly. We are incredibly proud of the results our representative teams achieve on the world stage across all our paddling disciplines, but the people and role models we have both on and off the water, including our board members, national and state executives, and staff partners, commercial industry operators, coaches, officials, volunteers, families, and fans are the best. This plan goes beyond our sporting success on the podium with the vision to create a dynamic and thriving paddling ecosystem. While our clubs will still be, will always be at the heart of what we do, we want to engage actively with and add value to the broader paddling community. We have a rich history of success that gives us a strong foundation, and now it's time to grow, expand, and diversify our revenue streams. Paddle Forward 32 has been developed in consultation with our broader paddling community, led by our new CEO, Kim Crane, with the full support of our state associations and the Paddle Australia board, working hand in hand with the management team. We are ready to implement our new roadmap with capability to lead and serve with energy, expertise, and drive that will create a legacy, but all the way to Brisbane 2032 and beyond. Hot diggity.
Well, it's a good strategy. Like, they're developing a program that the more people that get more opportunity to get into a sport, and so if it's hard to get into a sport, you might have some very talented people
yeah.
that just never get the opportunity. Yep. Right? And so by them creating this Paddle Forward 32, it's an opportunity to get as many people into the sport as possible. And you're going to have a bunch of these highly qualified, you know, skilled people float to the top. And who knows what this is going to end up proving in 2032. They could end up with a lot of medals, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, the more you get people out there, the more programs you get the people involved. Like, I liken it to, there's our recreational center across the road here.
Yeah.
And when we first moved here, they had different thing. You open up the books, and these are the courses we offer.
Yeah.
Some of them are based on the number of people. I was going to take up fencing, but there just wasn't enough people to.
Yeah, you need enough people
for that, for exactly. that program. So the yeah. program wasn't offered.
Yeah.
So who knows how stabby I could have been? People will never know.
Could have been world class.
I could have been a world class stabby guy. But if you don't have those programs for yeah. people to participate in,
you
will never know.
You'll never realize your capabilities.
Fred's just sitting there paddling his local river because...
Because he never had the opportunity.
He never had the opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
To realize the sport's vision, five pillars will support the growth strategy towards 2032. Pillar one, lifestyle, clubs, and community. Developing an inclusive and active paddling community with pathways, platforms, and programs. Pillar 2, engagement and partnerships. Supporting the growth and sustainability of our sport and lifestyle. Pillar 3, sport and events. Elevating Australia to as a premier paddle destination, improving quality of on-off water events, and promoting quality paddling experiences. Pillar 4, performance and pathways. Supporting our Australian athletes to become the world's best paddlers and people. Pillar 5, leadership and services. Leading with capability to serve, grow, promote, and advocate for our paddling community. That sounds like a pretty good program.
I wish we could somehow implement something like this in Canada where, or anybody could do it around the world. If you mm-hmm. can implement a program like this to develop your youth into becoming world-class paddlers or whatever.
Well, it's all the part of getting them out there, right?
Yes. Yeah.
So.
Opportunity.
Yeah. So I'm glad they've put this into place and we'll definitely keep our peepers on it as time goes till at least 2032.
Yes. I'm sure we'll talk about this again.
I am sure. That is all I have this week. That's it. Nothing
Excellent.
More.
Well, that was a very interesting episode.
Yeah. Well, like I say, I mean, everybody's, there's people out there looking for new shoes, but yeah. now, you know, sort of, we go a little bit deeper
yeah.
into just our regular,
well, exactly. this is what you want to look yeah.
at.
Yeah.
You know. And Al Fawcett, he's a man. He's a man. So all you people going down these, dropping off these waterfalls, 100-foot waterfall dropping straight down.
In his late
40s. You don't know from waterfalls. Dug out log canoes with branches for bouncers.
I know.
In the front.
Like that sounds like it should be like a young 20s person kind of game. But no, he was in his late 40s.
Yeah, 48, man. Woo-hoo! What a guy.
And he died in his bed in his sleep.
Maybe he was dreaming about Niagara.
Maybe.
And he drowned in his dream. Because what they say, if you feel like you're flying, and then all of a sudden you fall, means you're falling out of bed.
Oh, I don't
Something
know.
Something like that, yeah. I don't know. Anyway.
Yes.
You got anything else?
I have nothing to add.
I am going to go out this weekend, I think, and try more... testing with the GoPro harness.
Oh, yeah. Get the dog out there. See if you can get her in and out of the boat. And
with it on.
Yeah.
And just turn around, look at me.
Yeah.
Just sit and have her stare at me as I paddle. It's got to be possible.
Tripod. She's a tripod.
Yeah. It's got to be possible to have a dog film a video. Like a 20-minute video of the dog's adventures.
So you cut enough stuff together.
Yeah.
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 With the music of Littlest Hobo in the background. And
right? Oh, it'll be awesome. It'll be awesome. Look, this is us capsizing. All righty. Well, if you want to find out more about us, you can find us at paddlingadventuresradio.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. You can download or stream our episodes at iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music, Player FM, and all your favorite podcast downloading sites. If you go to the episode page at Paddling Adventures Radio, you can stream or download all our episodes there. If you enjoy the podcast, please share it with your friends, family, and fellow paddlers. I want to thank everybody for listening this week. I'm Sean Rowley.
And I'm Derek Specht. We'll see you next time.